Poland by James A. Michener. Copyright 1983 by James A. Michener. This recording of the full-length reading of Poland was published by arrangement with James A. Michener and was produced in 1993 by Books on Tape Incorporated, which holds the copyright thereto. Neither this recording nor any part thereof may be reproduced or used for any purpose without prior written authority from Books on Tape Incorporated. This book is read by Larry A. McKeever. Acknowledgements. In 1977, a television company invited me to go to any exotic place in the world to shoot a documentary, and I astonished them by choosing, without hesitation, Poland. When they asked why, I replied, "If you look at its geographical and ideological position, you'll see that it must become a focal point within the next decade." In succeeding years, I visited Poland some 8 times, traveling to almost every part of the nation. Private sources provided me with a helicopter for the better part of a week. I used it to fly at a very low altitude over all of Poland. I was encouraged to visit schools, universities, laboratories, art centers, historical sites. And at one point, I said that what I needed most was to spend some time with a devout Roman Catholic clergyman who spoke English. By good luck, I was taken to see the Bishop of Krakow, Karol Wojtyla, with whom I had a series of productive conversations. Later, I spent time with Cardinal Wyszynski and Primate Glemp, and through them was allowed to see the workings of a church within a communist country. By accident, I spent a beautiful vacation at Lankut Palace, and by design, an extended tour to some dozen of Poland's magical castles. I also spent an equal amount of time in the heavy industries of Katowice and in the Lenin shipyards at Gdansk. By car, I traveled many hundreds of miles to all parts of Poland. In such work, I had the guidance of Edward J. Piechek, an American Pole, who, because of his humanitarian interest, had strong ties to Polish affairs, with an entree to almost any facet of Polish life. The car in which I traveled was often driven by his assistant, Stanley Moszuk, a gifted citizen of Poland with a strong knowledge of its art and history. When the time came in 1979 that I thought of writing a novel about the critical developments in Poland, it was obvious to me that since I did not speak Polish or read it, I would need some kind of bibliographical assistance, and Piechek and Moszuk came up with the idea of asking some dozen top intellects in Poland to draft summaries of recent scholarship in 15 vital fields. They chose the scholars, I set the topics, and a happy relationship ensued. The scholars received payment for summarizing material they already knew well, and I received an unmatched overview of Polish history as local authorities view it today. They wrote in Polish, which was translated by experts who sometimes knew the field under discussion as well as the writer. From such sources, and many others, I compiled an impressive body of research data, including some excellent books written in Polish but now available in English. After I had digested an enormous body of material and felt myself prepared to write the novel which I had had in mind for some years, I returned to Poland in the summer of 1981 and revisited every spot I proposed to write about. Tannenberg, where the great battle took place. Malbork of the Teutonic Knights. Zamość, which must be one of the most evocative small cities in Europe. Krzysztofor, a castle of unbelievable dimension. Tukla, of the captivating Mniczeks. Krakow, with its trumpeter. And, of course, that section of the Vistula shoreline which would house my story. I mention no Polish place in this novel which I have not visited, and that includes Kiev, which was once Polish. I followed each mile of Jan Sobieski's military expedition to Vienna, and there traced out his brilliant defense of that city. I went to all borders, followed all the military trails my characters would follow, and lived once more in Lankut Palace, imagining myself a guest of the great Princess Lubomirska, friend of Goethe, Ben Franklin, and Thomas Jefferson, all of whom considered her one of the most brilliant women in Europe. One of my best excursions was with a pair of notable Polish scholars who spent 2 weeks with me finding specific and out-of-the-way sites I wished to write about, including remote and towering Nidzica, which used to guard the far Hungarian border. I had the remarkable experience of being arrested twice within 90 minutes for speeding in Czechoslovakia, once at 40 miles an hour, once at 45. Polish license plates will trap you every time, my companion explained. One had to pay the fine in Czechoslovakian currency, of course, but it could be purchased only miles distant from the point of arrest. I left Czechoslovakia just ahead of the police, who wanted to make a third arrest. I left Poland 1 week before martial law was declared. The point of these comments is that I was constantly befriended and advised by a sterling group of Polish men and women who discussed with me hour after hour every aspect of Polish history that I proposed touching. Normally, as I have done in my other novels, I would list their names, their impressive occupations, their achievements in research and scholarship. But I cannot ascertain whether in the present climate this would hurt or help them. I know this. They were loyal Poles. They loved their land. They spoke of it with unbounded affection and never a hint of disaffection. They were patriots of a high order. Two of them, who had spent time in Auschwitz and Majdanek, brought tears to my eyes as we retraced in brutal, infinite detail the day-by-day existence in the latter camp. This book is dedicated to them, and I hope it conveys some of the passion they expressed in telling me of their Poland. The completed manuscript was read by Professor Marian Turski in Rome and by Clara Glawczewska in New York, both of whom are entitled to my warmest thanks. Explanation. This book is a novel. The three main families, the Counts Lubomski, the petty nobles Bukowski, the peasants Buk, are fictional, as is the village of Bukovo, its two castles, the manor house, and its peasants' cottages. Most of the characters on whom the action of the novel depends are also fictional. Because of the importance of the subject matter and the strangeness of Polish history to the average reader, the identification of certain historical characters, settings, and incidents may prove helpful. Chapter 1. Characters, Settings, and Incidents are Fictional. Chapter 2. The Tatars Genghis Khan, Batu Khan, and Ogodei are historic, as are Henry the Pious, his mother Queen Hedwig, and his reluctant general Nyskso the Obese. The Siege of Krakow and the Battle of Lenica are historic. Chapter 3. The Teutonic Knights Hermann von Salsa, Ulrich von Jungingen, and Kuno von Liechtenstein are historic, as are Queen Jadwiga from Hungary and King Jagello and Grand Duke Witold of Lithuania. The Battle of Grunwald is faithfully presented. Chapter 4. The Swedish King and his ravaging are historic, as are the Polish King Jan Kazimir and his aide Jerzy Lubomirski, and the Transylvanian invader Georgi Rakosi. The sieges of Częstochowa and Zamosk are historic. The Kusztopor Castle existed and was destroyed as depicted, and its Ossolinski owners are real, except that the particular members shown here are fictional. Chapter 5. All the principal military leaders on all sides are historic. King Jan Sobieski of Poland, Duke Charles of Lorraine, Prince Waldeck of the Germans, Kara Mustafa of the Turks. Inside Vienna, Rüdiger von Starhemberg and Hieronym Lubomirski are historic. Sultan Mohammed IV is depicted accurately, as is the Great Battle for Vienna. Chapter 6. Princess Lubomirska and her palace at Lankut are historic, as are the Czartoryskis at Pulawi, the Zamoyskis at Zamosz, and the Mniczeks at Dukla. The Granikis and their castle at Radzin are fictional, as are the particular Mniczeks at the Nidzica castle, which is very real.
Sample complete. Ready to continue?